Did you get a countdown this time?
Oh, I wasn't looking. I actually, you know what? It's possible that maybe that's what happened last time. But
we made that such a point last, you know, in like five episodes ago that, you know, we were cold opening and you're like, oh, you can't get me anymore because I get a countdown finally. Clearly that doesn't matter.
I guess it doesn't. I guess it, yeah, so.
Oh my God. Sometimes you're just so absurd.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, our old method of recording would show when it started recording. It's just, you know. So in either case, it's me not paying attention, probably.
Fair. Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll give that to you. Fair point.
It's You Know the Drill with Sam and Rutz.
Sup.
And today we've got a very sweet, soft, tender topic that's very close and personal. You're gonna see a side of Rutz that hopefully we'll never see again.
Good thing you worded it that way, because I was going to be like, don't be all sappy like that. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, it's... Oh, it's going to be sappy.
Only a little bit. Only a little bit.
You may shed a tear.
No, because I did that already. I did that in the process of doing this.
Oh, it was like that. The single tear that was contained in your tear duct unit.
It's more of a... Like... It's definitely the feeling of why are my eyes watering when they shouldn't be. That's what it is. I'm like, I could feel like I don't cry watching things, right? Except for Grave of the Fireflies, which I've talked about.
Oh yeah, that's rough. I did actually watch that, and that movie I will never watch again. It's amazing, but I can't handle it. I can't do that again. It's too grim. It's too sad and dark. But yeah, it's good. It's very good.
It's weirdly ironic that that's the I think what that was released as the B-side to either My Neighbor Totoro or Castle in the Sky. I don't remember which one it is.
Well, I know it came out in 88.
So I don't know when the other two. One. Yeah, they're all like released in the late 80s, so it could very well be either one.
Yeah.
But I know like they packaged it that way because they're like, this film is so sad that we're not going to get people to see it, you know, unless we package it with something happy. So I think it's the B release to My Neighbor Totoro, if I remember right, from back in the ages. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess what Rutz is getting at is that he has emotions.
Weird. I will say, I think it's a trigger for like, this is going to sound, I'm going to word it in the worst way possible, but it's okay. I don't like kids, right?
Yeah, neither do I.
But when kids are in trouble or harmed, it triggers the big brother response, especially if it's like a young girl or something like that, right? Like that, yeah. Right? It triggers the big brother response. And then I'm like, then I get emotional about it. So like, it's not, necessarily pervert to the story, but I know the first time that happened was in a movie. It's with Adrian Brody, and
oh, he was. I saw him on TV the other day.
It's the. I think it's called The Jacket.
No, never mind. It was a different Adrian. My bad.
I think the movie is called The Jacket. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie, and it was one of those movies that like, I randomly, you know, found on streaming, and I was like, this seems weird. Let's watch it. Mm-hmm. The idea is that, like, Adrian Brody, there's something wrong with him. I don't remember the whole premise of the story. But when he's put in this straitjacket, somehow he harms his head and is able to travel through time.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a reoccurring character. There's this woman, I think... this movie is all like completely fuzzled in my brain except for this scene.
Fuzzled?
It's all fuzzled.
I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, this girl, you know, we see her in multiple like moments throughout her life, right? As a young girl, as a teenager, you know, as a young adult, whatever.
Right.
And as a girl, she is in her home and her mother falls asleep on the couch with a lit cigarette and burns the house down. Okay. And so there's a very cinematic shot of like her just crying as the flames envelop the house around her, and the flames slowly like start to burn her alive kind of situation. And yeah. I remember just sobbing I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of this episode. The point of this episode is just that I wanted to talk about our journeys because we both come from the same kind of like, you know, base love of film. We're both movie people, right? We're film majors in college, and mm-hmm. you know, I know that's something like early on we resonated with. So
yeah. So how old were you when you first realized that you wanted to be a filmmaker?
So it was late, I would say. It was like late teens was when I finally decided. Because like, for example, when I was going to school, right? Mm-hmm. I was kind of faced with the dilemma, right? Of going to where I ended up going to school, Las Vegas, mm-hmm. and to pursue essentially a degree in art, even though technically it was a science. How they classified film studies is weird at that school.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the time, I was going to go to UC Berkeley, prestigious school, right?
Mm-hmm.
For business law. That was like where it was at. It was like, do I want to go to the school where essentially it was, do I want to go to the school where, frankly, I'd probably be, you know, more well off, right?
Yeah.
And go to somewhere where I'm fascinated and I still love, don't get me wrong, and have a much higher chance of being able to earn an income in life, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Or do I follow a passion?
Yeah.
And I ended up choosing the passion. And so that's where it came to that.
And did you... Now, that's when you decided you want to be a filmmaker, but did you have a love for movies all your life, or when did your love of movies begin?
1,000%. So it was an interesting movie, okay? So do you have, before I get into mine, do you have a movie that like you would rewatch all the time as a kid?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I actually, and like this was a little later, because I actually wasn't, and I could get into my thing
I want to bounce back and forth.
But like, I didn't get into movies until I was a little, you know, like I wasn't into them when I was a kid as much. Like I'd watch them, but I wasn't, you know, it wasn't until like I had my turning point where I want to become a filmmaker, where it was like, okay, yeah, I love movies. But when that did, well, actually, even before then, when I was a kid, it was Beetlejuice. Like I would watch Beetlejuice so often that like I memorized the entire movie line for line. But then like as I got more into movies and like I was a teenager or whatever, like I'd go through phases where I'd rewatch the same movie. Like I went through, you know, and this was more like middle, late high school where I started doing stuff like this. Cause I got obsessed with The Karate Kid and I watched that movie like, you know, all the time, and I'd order pizza and I'd you know, eat pizza while watching it. And then it was like The Breakfast Club. I think I caught that on TBS and I was like, oh, I love this movie. And so I watched that 1,000 times. And then there was, and then Terminator. And then there was also RoboCop. RoboCop is a movie that probably Beetlejuice and RoboCop are the movies I've seen the most, and A Christmas Story. But there's another reason for that. We've talked about that in the past, I'm sure. But yeah, RoboCop, like when I was animating in like late high school and early college, and like I would start recording, you know, like I would basically start and stop my camera to capture either the drawing or the, you know, the figures or whatever.
Individual frames and cells and whatnot. Yeah.
I learned pretty early on that I had to do this at night just because of where I was shooting, you know, the lighting and everything.
Yeah.
And so I would often sit there and like I had like a my uncle had gotten me a portable DVD player for my birthday. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I would record, I would just have a movie sort of on in the background in this portable DVD player. So it was out of the way, so it wasn't, you know, shining any light on the, you know, the field of that of recording.
Right.
And most of the time it was RoboCop that I was watching.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, to answer your question in a very long roundabout way, yes.
Okay, so it's interesting. But, so like
before we get any further though, I think we haven't really said the theme of this is the inspiration behind this episode is that Rutz has fallen back in love with movies.
Yeah, in a roundabout sense. In particular animation, but in general movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just was like, I think it'd be an interesting conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
As long as my neighbor stops moving furniture.
I mean, I've been hearing stuff, but that's not one of the things I'm hearing. Like, I was hearing stuff earlier.
Yeah, that's so. It sounds like they're moving something in their kitchen. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't complain. They're nice.
Oh, okay. That one is nice. Nice neighbors. Got it.
That's the one I told the story on the podcast, I believe, that we got into an argument and then she came over with her daughter and brought me cookies.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. All right. So, regardless. So, as I'm told, I don't remember this clearly because I've talked about how, you know, my memory is it cuts, you know, parts of my life into segments and then deletes it, right? Like a hard drive.
Of course, because as we all know.
Yeah, of course, because I'm a robot, yeah. and I still remember some scenes from this movie fondly, right? But because of where I grew up, right? I grew up in, I guess technically we're Central California.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been considered NorCal because I'm like right there at the border, right? And so, there's always been like a Hispanic culture, right? Because we used to be part of Mexico, right? So, for example, my city, even growing up, right? There's a lot of Hispanic heritage, history, and so I've always been loosely fascinated with Hispanic and Mexican history, right? And it still persists to this day. Like two of my favorite artists are Salvador Dali and Frida Kahlo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're both things great. Like that.
And so, because of that, I've always been inspired by movies, you know, either set in Mexico or, you know, that have some kind of influence in that. Some kind of, you know, the Spanish flair in a movie. Sure.
Yeah.
And so apparently as a kid, my favorite movie to watch was Desperado. You guys remember that with Antonio Banderas?
I haven't seen that one.
So there is I can tell you there's a couple of particular scenes. It's because it's the
is Salma Hayek in that?
Salma Hayek is in that. Yes.
Okay.
And there's two particular scenes. There's an opening bar scene, which is like an insane shootout, and then there's an ending scene with an insane shootout. It's like a loosely inspired Western action story. Made by Robert Rodriguez as part of the El Mariachi trilogy? Quadrology?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many movies are in that franchise. But that apparently that's the movie I watched the most, right?
Yeah.
I put that on all the time. And I remember, so even at that point, like, I was born in 91. That came out in, like, 93. So it was relatively new at the time, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Even by the time, like, I was watching, you know, movies all the time at, you know, 4 or 5, 6, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from what I hear from my dad, that was it. And there are certain movies, like, in our past that we would watch a lot. Because I'm not the binging type. At all. And that's because of my dad. My dad is definitely the one, like, he thinks it's a good time of when I go to visit. That he'll fall asleep in front of the TV and just expect me to just hang and do, you know, like, and just experience what's on the TV.
Right.
That's the kind of parenting he is. That's, you know, that's just what he finds is a good time. And so he's got movies that he's binged so many times. And he'll just tell me he's watched, like, okay, so I can actually name the big three. The big three. Because it's A Knight's Tale. From like 97 with Heath Ledger.
Right.
Which I still enjoy that as a movie.
That's 97?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, it's like 96, 97, I think. Maybe 03? Maybe 03?
I think it's... I thought it was like 2000.
You gotta call me out on that. Now I gotta look.
Or like closer to that. I don't know. Okay,
I meet in the middle. 2001. I was close.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
Feels older than that. But I will say, that movie... Because I've seen that movie probably a dozen and a half times, at least. Is a movie that taught me how important score is. Because of how... its inclusion of using modern music in a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
Such a good example of how good of a score it can make. The other movies are Condemned, which is like 2007, 2008. With Steve Austin, the wrestler. Mm-hmm. Which is basically just Kurosawa's Battle Royale. That's not a Kurosawa movie, but Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. But with prisoners. That's basically what that is. And then Sahara with William H. Macy and... There's a lot of stars in that movie. I can't remember who else is in that movie. But those are like his big three. Hell, like I talked to him like 2 days ago as of recording. He's like, yo, I watched this new movie, and, you know, they're dancing in a ballroom to David Bowie, and, you know, they just fight with horses. I'm like, you're watching Sahara, or not Sahara, you're watching A Knight's Tale again, aren't you? Yeah, it's the only thing on. I'm like, you can't use that excuse, that there's the only thing on. You have every streaming service. You can find something else. And so, like, I've always been adamant of, like, anti-rewatching things because of that. I find it
fair enough.
I find it lazy.
I'm more like that these days. Like I used to, like I said, and there's certain movies that I've seen a million times that I'll watch again. You know, you got those comfort movies that never get old. But I definitely nowadays, like I've gotten into the habit in the last couple years, I guess, of ordering delivery and just like putting on a movie that I don't really care too much about. Like, hopefully that's just fun, you know, it's something I don't want to have to like really, that doesn't make me think too much, or I don't have to really care too much about the story. And it has to be a movie I've never seen. So I've been doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah. It's like, because I've never been that person that's like, I'm going to watch, you know, a movie that I'm familiar with that I've seen, you know, that I can quotable or anything like that. Because, you know, I understood very early on in my life that, you know, the world of creativity, music, movies, TV, etc., is so endless and expanse. Why waste time watching something you've already seen when you can find something new? I'm all about discovery. And I always have been.
Well, I will say this for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I watch a movie once, it's like I haven't seen it. I don't like... The first time I watch something, I'm just so, like, it's hard for me to sort of get my bearings, that it's like, there's just a lot of names I can't keep up with all the characters. I know I sound like an idiot, but, like, I
no,
am
No,
idiot.
No, no, so, yeah, but I understand that feeling.
Thanks.
Because,
yeah,
instead of rewatching it, so I'll do that sometimes. I'll go into a movie, if I'm not familiar with it, I'll go into a movie, I'll watch it, and I'll be like, oh, okay. And then what I'll do is when I get home, so let's for example, I go out to the movies to watch something, right? When I get home, I will go and I'll research, I'll go to Wikipedia or IMDb, right? And I'll read through the synopsis that someone has written about the movie. And that way, it'll answer any, like, base questions I've got. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, for me, and I do want to watch many movies over again, and I don't often get around to it. Because, like, usually what it is like, I'll have an impression. Sometimes, like, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I really like that movie. But, like, afterwards, I don't remember much at all. I usually don't remember much. And I usually, like, I'm usually kind of lost in the beginning. And then as the movie goes on, like, I'm able to pick up and, like, get what's happening. And then, you know, so it's like, I can still watch a movie once and have a good experience with it. But it's like, I almost never remember it unless I watch it twice. A second viewing is what's going to cause me to actually feel like I've absorbed what I watched in a significant way.
And I can see that. Like, I think, so that, and I agree with that to some extent now, because that's partly what prompted this, this idea, right? I don't think it's going to be something I necessarily keep in practice, but it might be. I don't know.
I think it's good to rewatch movies, and I want to do it more. Like, for instance, Die Hard. I watched Die Hard when I was like 20, maybe 21, maybe 22. I don't know. And I didn't have much memory of it. It's like, I was like, I probably liked it, but I don't really know. And then I rewatched it like, like five, six months ago, maybe 4 months ago. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best action movie. It's incredible. So, it's worth revisiting movies.
So okay. Let me rephrase then. I'm not someone who will watch something as a comfort movie, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
But I do think, like, if it's been X amount of years since you've seen a movie, right, where you have fundamentally changed as a person, or the climate has changed, right? And so then the movie can be interpreted differently. So it feels as if it's a different experience. Then I'm down with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, I would be down to watch Die Hard now, right? Because I have not seen it since I was probably 18, 19, give or take.
Well, what about this?
And it's a different climate now. I'm a different person.
So what about this? Here's two scenarios for you.
Okay.
Would you, if there's a movie that you like that was playing in a theater,
uh-huh,
would you, and let's say you've never seen it in a theater, would you go out to see it in the theater?
So, yes and no, depending on the context. Okay, so there's a context here, right? So, for example, one of the movies, which I'll get to, once I get to the whole thesis of this episode.
Sure.
Is a foreign film, right? And so when I originally watched it, I watched it subtitled, okay?
Yes.
The first time. Second time I watched it, I was able to go to the theater because it got an English, translation, and was in a limited run of a local theater nearby me.
Yeah.
Again, I watch it that way because it's a different experience.
Okay, but it's not. But if it was the same experience, what if it was a movie that you felt needed to be, would be enhanced by being on the big screen? It wasn't a different in any other way.
Okay. So again, it gets down to the different experience aspect.
Gotcha.
For a good example of that is the Five Nights at Freddy's movie that we talked about. Right.
Oh, that's right.
I saw that twice because I watched it streaming for the sake of talking about it on the episode. But I went to watch it in the theater because it was one of those things where you have to watch that movie, because the movie's not particularly good, but you have to watch that movie with fans of the show of the franchise, right?
Yeah.
To get the full experience of that.
Right.
So it's again, different experience. If I can get more than one experience out of a film, then I'll watch it again. Otherwise, I'll watch the movie and then it's bookended, right? That's the experience of the movie. If I'm not going to get the same, if I'm just going to relive that experience,
right?
I'm not for it. If like I'm taking, so like, for example, someone I dated recently has not seen my favorite animated movie. In that case, I watch it again because it's with someone who has never seen it. So it's a different experience.
Okay. Yeah. You answered my other question. I was going to ask you about that, or like, mm-hmm. Yeah, or even if, like, let's say you had a group of friends who wanted to see this movie and you'd seen it before, but because they're watching it, you'll participate.
If I liked the movie the first time. Because that happened last night. Last night, we were...
But what if they've all seen it before? Is it still... And it's a movie you like?
It could be a different experience if I haven't seen it with them, right?
Yeah,
For example, we've been doing movie nights in VR chat,
mm-hmm,
with the VR group as a way to mix things up. And sometimes I'm just phoning it in and participating, like I did on the last movie night. We watched Violet Night. I think we talked about that on an episode.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And I was mainly there. Well, the movie ended up actually being good, so I did watch a majority of it. But I was there mainly to show up,
mm-hmm,
and I was playing Power World almost most of the time.
Right.
So sometimes there's a lot of that, sometimes I will just do it and just to show up. because I've got a weird, you know, kink in my brain of.
You got a lot of weird kinks in your brain.
Ain't that the truth? but it's like if it's an obligation thing. I don't necessarily have a problem saying no, right? But I'm much more along the lines of say yes to most opportunities because you'll have a different experience, right?
Right.
But there are moments of with certain people that it's like, okay, if someone invites me in particular to do something, I feel obligated to show up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even if I'm like not thrilled about it, I'll just my brain's like, no, you have to.
Yeah. That makes sense. So why don't we're about like 25 minutes in. How about we like get to the meat of the premise that you mentioned you were gonna get into that?
Sure. So to speed run through most of this, right? When growing up, you know, Desperado was the thing, right?
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. I went through a big action movie period, but the genre that stuck with me the most was sci-fi. Okay.
Sure.
And it still is, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, like sci-fi's great.
For example, my favorite movie, like if I have to pick one, is The Martian. I love The Martian, such a fantastic movie.
Matt Damon,
yes.
Yeah.
That's probably also enhanced because I watched the movie, loved it, then read the book, loved the book even more.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of solidified that.
Sure.
But like I'm also someone who, because I discover so much, right? It's hard for me to pick favorites because I have to break it down, right? Like while The Martian is my favorite movie, it's more like my favorite sci-fi movie because I also have a favorite animated movie, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
et cetera.
Of course.
And so, you know, I go through those cycles, go through those periods. Like, for example, what is your favorite animated movie? As an animator, I guess you could
say. That's a little difficult. My knee jerk response is Nightmare Before Christmas, but there are so many others that I would want to include as well. But I think mostly, and again, my only hesitation with that is because, and I usually say it is one of my favorite movies, but I love all forms of animation, but it's hand-drawn animation is what I'm really truly enamored with. And I love stop motion as well. And I think Nightmare Before Christmas is a remarkable display of stop motion. And that's part of it. But I also love it. Like, I love the story and I love the music. There's so many things I love about that movie. So it's like, it's not just the animation. And when it comes to animation, like I really kind of enjoy animation that doesn't really, where you don't have to think too much about the story too. Like I enjoy like, you know, old cartoons where it's just, you can kind of just focus on the visuals and
I get that,
you know, so, you know, and then there's, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but again, that's got a really great story.
Right.
And any movie is going to have like a really, you know, so it's, I don't know. That would probably be like a full conversation.
Okay. All right.
But I'll just say Nightmare Before Christmas and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and the ones that come to mind.
So I will say this, and you'll probably yell at me for it. I don't think I've seen Nightmare Before Christmas in
full. I'm not gonna yell at you. Snap at me,
come on.
It's what I want. You should watch the whole thing. It's great.
I think I may have watched it when I was a kid, right? But I think again, because of blocking out things. That is not a movie I remember, or at least remember fondly. You know what I mean? And I know there's a lot of people that do.
It's under 80 minutes.
So that's what I'm thinking. So that's why I think that is something that I would rewatch again, because again, it'd be a different experience because I probably watched it as a kid. And when I was not that familiar with, you know, animation. You know, now that I'm much more familiar with filmmaking and animation, and I know how much of it's a beloved movie. You know, it might be something I might add to this year's, you know, Christmas movie docket. You know what I mean?
You might.
I probably will. Why not?
Yeah, do it.
So my, just because it kind of sparked the initial conversation, my favorite animated film is Coco.
Okay. Is that the one where the kid becomes a skeleton?
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I saw that one's really good. Yeah, I really like it.
Not only because it peaks, you know, it hits the two parts of home, right? My love for music and my love for, you know, for films with, you know, Spanish heritage, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, like, Recuérdame is such a beautiful song. That movie makes this robot emotional. but my love for animation has always been like, it's been a weird journey for this, right? So like, yeah. For example, I watched some animated stuff as a kid, didn't really hit home for me, right? However, I make
even
it
anime,
you know, so I make it clear that I'm a fan of anime on this show, right? And so that route has been weird, right? Like, I'd say right now, yeah. I'm in my anime prime, I guess you could say.
Oh, least,
as far as watching.
Oh, and of course, Akira, that's another one I'd have to throw Akira in the...
is gold. That is a prime standard of adult animation. But, like, I grew up in the era of, you know, Toonami anime, right?
Sure, yeah.
When that was a thing.
A lot of us did, yeah.
And so that kind of sparked my initial love for that. And then that's always kind of been in the background, right? Throughout mm-hmm. the, you know, late, you know, throughout the 2000s, late 2000s, early 2010s, et cetera. When I started going to college in like 2009, 2010, that's when I first like refound my love of anime in general. However, that love has always been through anime films. That's always been my thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would much prefer, like, for example, I've had the conversation with a lot of my friends. You know, we always go through, you know, what are your favorite anime series? Blah, 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 blah. And every single time I'm asked that question, I always have to speculate. I'm like, I need to put films on there because that's always where I find my love, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the meeting of the two genres for me, or the two formats, right? Anime and films. And so one of those foundations, right, was Studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, chair adjustment. Anyway, I did not watch Studio Ghibli as a kid.
Interesting.
I watched it when I would say probably mid-teens with my sister as she was growing up, because she was her favorite two movies growing up were My Neighbor Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service.
Love Kiki's Delivery Service. That might be my favorite of those.
They're so good. They're so good. And at that point, like, I was familiar with anime as a genre, but like not Studio Ghibli as a whole, right? And then I went to school, started learning things. I took classes in animation and anime. I took classes in a lot of things.
I didn't know you took animation classes.
Yeah. So this because my focus was going to be in like animation and cinematography and like along those lines. That's where my focus was because like, let's say early teens when I finally was like, I want to make things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say high school, let's put it that way. Let's say high school, mid teens. I was like, I want to be a director. Right.
Right.
Then going into college, I went through, okay, I don't want to be a director anymore. I want to be a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then I got on my first production and I was like, I want to write things, but that's not my focus. I want to be the guy, as I explained it, I want to be the guy who yells at the crew because the snow is falling the wrong way.
Right.
I'm like, I want to be the cinematographer. And so, you know, I've always gone through different phases of appreciating films, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now that I'm older, right? I'm one of those people, much older. Yes, much older. I don't care about Oscars per se, but right. I always make it a habit of, okay, these movies are nominated. I'm going to pick 10 of these movies and watch like the most hyped of the Oscar movies. Right.
Yeah. So you're in the cultural know.
Yeah, exactly. And so, one of these movies happened to be The Boy and the Heron. Okay.
Oh yeah. I didn't get a chance to watch that one.
Yeah. Is, Hayao Miyazaki. Who is, you know, renowned with Studio Ghibli.
He came out of retirement to make it.
Exactly. And so I'm like, I want to watch it.
Of course.
And it happened that it just fell that it's no longer in theaters around me. It's not on streaming. I can't even find a pirated version of it. I looked. I can't find it. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I was in one of the VR programs one night, and I'm like, you know what? I want to watch an animated film. And I was going back through my memory bank, and I thought, I was like, I want to watch something from Makoto Shinkai. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the big three directors for me when it comes to like animated films, right? It's Hayao Miyazaki, Satoshi Kon, and Makoto Shinkai. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not familiar with Satoshi Kon's work, highly recommend his movies. They're fascinating. He's made some of the best animated thrillers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big ones that got ported, at least loosely, to the stateside. He made his film Paprika, which is the film that's inspired Inception. So, fun fact.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Paprika is really... have I seen Paprika? Or am I thinking of... Maybe? You know what? I don't know if I have. I'm thinking of Blue. What's it called? Something Blue.
Perfect Blue?
Yeah.
That's also Satoshi Kon.
Okay.
That's his big hit, like from 97, I think.
Yeah, maybe I haven't seen Paprika. I don't know.
Another fantastic movie. That is considered one of the gold standards for thriller movies.
It is incredible. It's an incredible movie.
And I will say, it's not necessarily as good as his films, right? But he made an anime series. He made one. It's called Paranoia Agent. Highly recommend. It's got a weird as hell opening. Like, it's considered one of the weirder ones of all time. But
oh, interesting, yeah.
Fantastic. Anyway, so I was feeling nostalgic. And I was like, I'm going to watch a Makoto Shinkai movie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know who Makoto Shinkai is, I did not realize how big of a discography, or not discography, I keep using the word discography, how big of a filmography he has until I did the research for this, I guess, quote unquote, research for this episode. Because I know him as the big three of like romance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your Name, Weathering With You, and Suzume are like the big three that he's released recently.
Yeah.
From like 2016 to about 2023. Was that a 2023? I think Suzume was 2023.
Oh, I don't know.
So I'm like, I want to rewatch these. Right. And I'm going through his filmography and I realized how much indirectly this man has had like an impact on me as a fan and as a filmmaker. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was sitting there going, and I'm like, I remember this. I was watching Your Name. And for those who don't know, Your Name for a while was the number one Japanese film of all time. And I think was like the third most like successful romance film of all time. Something mm-hmm. along those lines. It was big all around the world. And I was like, this got me into this binge, right? Where I think maybe because I was feeling retrospective, or you know, my third eye was just a little more open. Not 100% sure. But I decided, I'm like, I'm going to binge watch through his work. I haven't done that since my college days.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered in particular watching his the second movie, Weathering With You. That movie, when it came out, made me fall in love with animation, you know, for mm-hmm. the first time. I truly yeah. fall in love with animation because I was just so amazed with how someone could capture the essence and chaos of water, but make it still so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I rewatched that again, right? And I think it's because I didn't watch it the first time in English. I'm not 100% sure. But by the time that movie ended, I was definitely still sobbing. And I think it's because it's a good representation. So if you haven't seen Weathering With You, I'll pitch it real quick. Mm-hmm. Follows a guy who left home to come to Tokyo. And Tokyo is eternally raining, basically, right?
Right.
And so he meets this girl, like he's like home, like I think he's like homeless, basically on the verge of being homeless. Mm-hmm. He's falling asleep in the equivalent of a McDonald's, and she works there and decides to get, like, give him a burger, and, you know, just like, hey, just, you know, trying to take care of him essentially. Mm-hmm. And she ends up getting is like mugged or, you know, being harassed by some guys. He saves her, you know, so they start developing this relationship. Okay. And she has an interesting quirk of hers, right? She's called the Sunshine Girl because this girl has a power that she can basically pray to the Shinto gods to mm-hmm. make sunshine appear, you know, make the rain okay. go away. And so they make a business where, like, he's essentially, you know, her manager, and they'll, you know, they'll get hired by the local community center, or, you know, there's a bride who wants their wedding, you know, a clear sky on their wedding day, etc. Right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, like there's a very sweet scene of this old, you know, older woman, her grandmother, just or not her grandma, but a grandmother, who just wanted, you know, the sun to shine for a couple of hours so she can spend time with her grandkids.
Right.
Yeah. It kind of showcases, like, the fragility, right, of, you know, just, like, daily life, essentially.
Yeah.
However, it's uncovered that every time she uses her power, she has to sacrifice a bit of herself, right, to give up, essentially, to the gods, I guess you could say,
mm-hmm.
In order to, you know, make the rain go away. And eventually, she uses too much of it, and she disappears, right? And so, through his struggles, through the rain, he decides that he's like, I want to bring her back somehow, right? And he gets whisked up into the sky through this whole ritual, through all this stuff. And he finds her. And it's an eternal, you know, struggle for, I guess, his love. And she's like, you know, I can't exist with you, you know, down on this plane, right? Because otherwise, you know, you'll never see sunshine again, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't care, even if, you know, even if it's going to rain and it's going to go, you know, just be eternally, essentially, you know, bad time, right? I mm-hmm. still choose you. Okay. And for some reason, I think maybe because I'm reeling after what's been going on lately, that just re-hit me all over again, which hasn't happened in a movie in a long time. Not to mention that, at least for those three movies, right? Your Name, Suzume, and Weathering with You, Makoto Shinkai has gotten the same band to record the score for all three films. And it reminds me so the versatility of, like, J-rock and J-pop, and makes it such a just a beautiful score that, like, hell, before we were recording this podcast, I was listening to songs from Weathering with You because they're such good quality songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched those first two, right? Suzume, it's fine. I don't necessarily care for it that much. I do think it's an interesting interpretation of the, like, the boy meets girl kind of, you know, style of a film. Mm-hmm. The main character, the main, like, quote unquote love interest, basically exists as a desk chair for most of the movie. That's a weird one.
Yeah.
But, like, I was, like, going back through, and I was just, like, kind of prodding, you know, through my history, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought Makoto Shinkai was a lot newer of a director. And when I went back through, because I was trying to decide what to binge, I found that he has, you know, dabbled in or worked on some of the more impactful films that I thought were more, like, indie, in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
Of my life, of my love, right? Of this kind of style of filmmaking. For example, one of the films that, and I still hold up there, even though it's not necessarily a good one, but it reminds me of, like, the freedom of storytelling, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, the film is actually ended up being Makoto Shinkai's debut, which I had no idea until I was researching for this episode. Is called The Place Promised in Our Early Days. It's like from like 2004, something along those lines. And it's an alternate history film where Japan, something happened during World War II. Again, I can't remember it. You know, I haven't watched it in a long time.
Yeah.
But it's an alternate history where Russia is like part of Japan. And it follows this boy and a girl as they grew up through the ages. And how essentially they keep reconnecting in their life, but they can never, you know, fully make that connection, right? There's always something that's going on.
Yeah.
And it reminded me how much, you know, about the freedom of storytelling, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's other films like the big one, which I know a lot of people love, but I did rewatch, and honestly, in my opinion, is the weakest of his filmography. I do like the concept of the title. It's called 5 Centimeters Per Second.
Mm-hmm.
And the inspiration for that title is it's the speed of a cherry blossom falling. Like a cherry blossom petal falling.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's just, you know, I reminded why I like films again. Because while I'm still not sold of, like, making a film, right? Like, in today's landscape, I'm more interested in being an author, right? And then...
Yeah, but still, you still love it.
Yeah, I still love it. But, like, I'm going down a different path, right? Like, my idea now is... I want to make a book or a story, and then I want to help it adapt it into a film or something.
Yeah, I have a similar, you know, similar goal.
Right. And so, or maybe not necessarily a film, but making it into some other format because, you know, the landscape has changed. And
it has.
You know, it's even wider now, and you can be as creative as you need to be. And I think that's brilliant. I am going to start watching movies again. And I thought about this, actually. This was, I guess, a shower thought this morning. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I really haven't stopped watching movies, per se.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, because, like, my favorite format right now, right, is the miniseries. I love, like, 3 to 4 episode docuseries.
Okay? And that's basically a movie.
It's basically a movie. But I think it's because it allows me to watch it in parts, right?
We need more intermissions. We need more intermissions.
That's exactly what I think it is. Like, I could sit there and watch... Okay, for example, we talked about a couple episodes ago. American Nightmare, right?
Yeah.
American Nightmare, realistically, is a 2.5-hour movie. But because it's broken up into 3 episodes in 45 minutes, and I can watch them, and they're just more digestible... Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm getting more out of it, even though I'm really not, but I'm getting more out of it because I can break it up. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I love films again. That's all.
That's all. That's it.
That's all. And my rec is, you know, if you haven't watched anything from Makoto Shinkai, highly recommend it. They're all, you know, all of his films have been adapted into English at one point or another, I think. Or at least the big 3, you know.
There's your rec.
That's your rec. if you want pretty visuals and a decent story, Weathering With You. If you want pure romance with a bit of a sci-fi twist, Your Name. And if you want some action adventure with forced romance, in my opinion, Suzume.
There you go. 3 recs in 1.
Yeah. I guess realistically... If anything, check out Rad Wimps. That's the band who does the score of all 3 of them. Fantastic. It's such a good time.
Well, you got your work cut out for you, listeners.
Yeah, you got 4 recs. You want to throw a 5th one on there? You got a rec or something?
No. This is going to become a 2-part, 2.5-hour movie if I add another rec. This is a feature length episode.
All right, fine. Fair point. All right, well, I guess hope you enjoyed this. A little trip down memory lane, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And let me know. I want to know. Do you guys have? I'll post the question in Spotify. But if you guys listen to it there, feel free to answer the question. Do you have a favorite like animated film, Eastern, Western, whatever? Or just let me know what your favorite film is. I want to know. I want to watch them. I want to listen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I hope you guys enjoy. Like, rate, share. You know what to do. And we'll catch you next week.
All right. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh my god, my mouse is frozen.